Just a couple other factors here before we move on, kind of out of these basics. We're going to talk primarily about U.S. antitrust, but foreign antitrust is a big wild card, and a lot of times we don't even know when you sign what kind of timeline you're looking to. So you'll definitely need to have people weighing in on that as you think about your timetable to closing. And as we talk just generally about having these longer periods to get antitrust approval, if you're going beyond the initial waiting period, things like gun jumping, communications, understanding kind of what the rules of the road are for those long periods become much more important, because you certainly don't want to get yourself in trouble, not necessarily on the merits of your deal, but because of activities and behaviors that were going on during that interim period. And then I just say, just kind of overall, you know, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but when we're talking about these longer time periods to get to getting to a conclusion, you've got to stir that into your outside date. And so if you have a process you think is going to last a while, think about it when you're talking about your outside date, because if you put a bunch of efforts covenants in that people have to go do, but then you have a short outside date, then it's not going to amount to much.
So now we'll switch gear to what in my mind is one of the longest and most heavily negotiated provisions, which is the precise amount of pain a buyer has to commit to undertake in order to get a deal through. And when I say pain, we're really talking about structural remedies like divestitures or conduct remedies. The spectrum usually varies from what we call hell or high water, which is that the buyer has to do everything and anything under the sun to get the deal through, to the exact opposite, which is what we call anti-hell or high water, which is an express provision which says, okay, the buyer is going to try to get regulatory approvals, but the buyer specifically does not have to do X, Y, and Z. And then in between, you can have various gradations of efforts measured by materiality or material adverse effect, or specific dollar thresholds in terms of revenue or EBITDA or a combination of those. So, Scott, tell us, I mean, what are you seeing these days in deals, both deals that have real regulatory risk that needs to get allocated, but also deals that have no regulatory risk where you're just allocating the risk of the black swan event? Like, what are people putting in their documents? How are these provisions getting negotiated? Where do they shake out?
Sure. I guess to start on the no regulatory risk side, I think that's driven a little bit by just market dynamics and, you know, how much power does the buyer have. The market is certainly slower than last year. And so if you're conducting sort of what is not a hot auction, I think buyers have a fair amount of leverage to push back around the idea of a high divestiture commitment. When we talked about deals with real regulatory risk, I think you do need to divide it between deals that have horizontal issues, so where you have two competitors that could be buying each other, you know, your typical going from a 4-3 type market situation, and deals where there's a vertical issue. So if you're a customer and you're buying a supplier, you know, your competitors in that space could have concern that you're going to give preferential treatment to the buying customer relative to all the other customers. And on the horizontal side, so the two competitors being acquired, I think what we're seeing is it's still horses for courses, but there is more of a drive to try to solve issues and take them off the table earlier. As Rob described, second requests are taking longer and longer, and so the idea of going to fight out the terms of an exact divestiture package and try to minimize what you're going to divest, there's more of an opportunity cost that's associated with that. So in looking at the recent deals that have happened, I think there are more and more deals where you're sort of specifying up front what the package would be. And you're also taking off a series of remedies from the table. So you're saying, for example, that, you know, no matter what, I wouldn't have to divest X or Y. And those types of provisions, I think, are designed to make clear that, you know, the two antitrust counsel agree that, you know, X and Y shouldn't be a substantive issue, and they don't want to have the regulators come up with some creative theory as to why those would be picked up. So I think there's a little more specificity on the horizontal merger side of things. On the vertical merger side, the issue is that the remedy that works there is one you referred to before, which is conduct remedies, right? The problem is that conduct remedies are viewed with skepticism by a number of regulators. There have been situations in the past where a conduct remedy has been agreed, for example, selling on non-discriminatory terms, hasn't been complied with. They're challenging for DOJ and FTC to enforce. And so I think what you're seeing in the current regime is that the government is more likely to not accept any conduct remedies and instead to sue and try to block the transaction. And so some of the high-profile deals we've seen, like the United Change Healthcare deal, those were really litigating about these types of issues. And so I think that in those deals, while you can ask for an agreement to commit to conduct remedies, you really do need to focus on your outside date and your commitment to litigate, because ultimately that's probably where this is going to be resolved. Unless you have a full hell or high water, you're not going to be able to solve for vertical issues unless you're willing to go to the mat to litigate it.
Rob, you told me you always put hell or high water in your auction drafts. Do you get it in the real one?
It's all about the leverage, as you
all
can imagine.
About the leverage.
So, and I think a lot of that's shifting over time as the deal market is changing. But yes, I typically do see hell or high water in auction drafts, because when you're representing the seller, you don't know what your buyer may ultimately end up being. If it is going to be somebody with some antitrust risk, you want to start in that position of strength in terms of your draft. But if you end up with somebody who maybe you don't see the antitrust risk, a lot of times the buyer will simply agree to hell or high water because they don't foresee a black swan event. But a lot of times you do end up negotiating, and I think it all ends up with a matter of leverage.
I know either Kim has clients with more leverage or more persuasive power, because she told me she's successful resisting.
Yes, I totally agree. It is always a matter of leverage, and maybe we've just been lucky, but exactly as Rob said, we're always seeing hell or high water in the auction draft. And then what I actually try to do as an M&A lawyer, not because I want to shirk from battle, is I actually try to push it to my antitrust colleagues and say, let's try and solve this on a substantive issue before we go back and forth into negotiating this provision. What are we actually talking about in terms of risk?